Value may be one of the most important concepts in podcasting that you must master if you want to be successful. Welcome to Podcast Creators, a show where we get podcasting advice from real podcasters. On the show today, we have Mike Cunningham, host of the Gill Athletics Track and Field Connections podcast. Mike walks us through what the value of his podcast is to both the company and to his guests. This interview was recorded on Riverside FM, so if you like the way this sounds, we'll put an affiliate link down in the show notes below. We'll also put links to Track and Field Connections and everything we talk about in today's episode down in the show notes below. All right, let's get to it. Mike, thank you so much for coming on Podcast Creators and sharing a little bit of your wisdom with the community. How are you today, sir?
I'm awesome, man. Greg, thank you so much for having me.
Is Track and Field Connections your first podcast?
I'm actually on my third iteration of podcast, and this one is through our company here, Gill Athletics. So this is the first corporate podcast. The other two have been kind of personal passion projects. They actually were so that I could learn how to podcast so I could do it for work.
Well, now that you've experimented and you've learned on your own podcasts, when you started Track and Field Connections, what were you trying to accomplish?
It's really about, you know, kind of three things: marketing, biz dev, and giving value back to our customers.
Well, there's all sorts of ways to do a corporate podcast where you can talk about your products or services or where you fit in the community. But you're an interview show where you talk to coaches. What is it that you talk to coaches about?
We really kind of do the bio of the coach. So we talk about when they first got into track, their different coaching stops, their mentors, things like that.
That sounds like it could take some time.
What we do is we do very long form. Probably we average an hour and 30, and we've gone as high as like 3 hours.
Wow, that's quite the commitment. So let's talk about some of the technical details of your podcast. Where do you host your podcast?
So when I first started, I found Anchor. I think everybody, a ton of podcasts are done through Anchor. So hopefully everybody knows Anchor, and found it because it was free and it was simple. and that was all I needed. I could use my phone. So that's how I first started. So, the first podcast that I ever did, the audio, it is terrible. You're doing it through the phone and there's a lot of hangups and stuff like that.
If you're looking in any of the social media groups, Anchor seems to be a very controversial choice. Is Anchor doing everything that you need it to do? Do you like using Anchor?
I do. You can read everything out there and how good or bad Anchor is. We have been 100% satisfied with what they provide for free.
That's awesome. Maybe we can get into what equipment you use to record Track and Field Connections.
We created a little mini studio here at work. So I do have, the acoustic paneling and all that kind of good stuff. I went out and found, honestly, I don't know if it was the cheapest package I could find on Amazon, but I think it was for $200. I found a company called Rockville. It's probably a private label. It's probably, everybody has probably the same mic on this level of cost. But it was a package that worked for me, right? So it had two mics, had all the, the windscreens and the pop filters and the boom arms, the headphones and the mixer. And so that's what I use. I use Rockville. It's not the greatest of quality, but it works. It works. That's kind of the basic line.
It actually sounds really good. And I'll put all the links to all this equipment down in the show notes below. But the microphone is a Rockville RMC-XLR. The headphones is a Rockville Pro-M50. The mixer is a Rockville RockMix 2. And then you have mic stands and pop filters, which are Rockville RTM-S21. As I said, I'll put all this in the show notes. Now, you could have bought something a little bit higher quality, or at least a little bit more expensive. Why is it that you chose Rockville?
I'm a real in the dirt kind of guy, right? So like I don't get hung up on, it has to be perfect to get going.
A very low cost setup, or a down and dirty setup, as you say, has served Track and Field Connections pretty well. Would you recommend other podcast creators buy low cost equipment? Or should they get that microphone that they've always wanted?
You know, my fear is that people don't get into podcasting because they think, oh, well, I have to spend $800 to $1,000. And certainly, you know, there's a little bit of the addict of you get what you pay for. So certainly there's higher quality. Maybe this thing's going to go, you know, I've had it for a little bit over probably a year now. Maybe it's going to bonk out of me in a year, you know, after a year. But yeah, I'll pay another $200 or not even because I'll just need the mic.
Well, even though you have all of the Rockville equipment, you have to record these interviews somehow. What do you use for that?
We record through Zoom. And as we wanted to get into more than one guest on at a time, so we've done some where we've interviewed the entire staff at the same time, you do have to pay for that next level up in Zoom to get that.
Okay, so you have the meeting on Zoom. I'm assuming you get all of the recordings from Zoom separately, and then you do what? How do you edit them?
You know, down and dirty. You're going to hear that term all through this podcast. You know, there's a whole subculture of the editing side of podcast. I don't spend a lot of time. I used to take our audio from the Zoom and put it through Audacity and do a couple of filters through there. That just takes time. I literally take that audio file, drop it straight into Anchor. I do have a pre-recorded intro and we schedule it to post. So the hours that I spend on it is really the interview itself. It's about getting to know my guest and building that relationship and that link there. So, you know, 2 hours a week, depending on how many interviews I do in a week.
You're right about this subculture. I mean, there are people who believe if you edit your podcast that it's fake or somehow not reality. I am a big fan of editing. I think editing is art and it's part of the style that I like. Is there a style that you kind of model your show after?
I was, this past tense now, a fan of the Joe Rogan Experience. Like, I liked his style. I liked the long form. You really got into a lot of stories and tangents. I liked his, you know, interview style. And so that's kind of where I mimicked that style off of. But I do wish I could take, you know, a 2 hour audio and put it down into like a narration form to where, you know, I'm post editing. I'm saying like, you know, hey, coach, really brought up a good point about the new NIL. Here's what he had to say. And then I run it. So I'm cutting out a lot of periphery, if you will. I just don't have time. If you're a full-time podcaster, attaboy, that's exactly what you should maybe be doing for your style. But for me, I've got, you know, when I record a 2-hour podcast during work, I've got 5 phone calls that I've missed and about 20 emails that I've missed back in my office, and I've got to get it done. So I just kind of forego that side and non-apologetically just get the content out there and provide the value to our listeners.
Well, I guess that leads us to the biggest question. Is it working? What kind of download numbers does Track and Field Connections get?
Yeah, so we've been doing this since January 20 and marketing it since April of 20, and we're at 52,000 downloads. So monthly, we're probably at about 2,000 to 3,000. Depends a lot on the guest. If it's a quote-unquote big name, it gets more, obviously. But so yeah, I'd say about 2,000 to 3,000 a month.
2 to 3,000 downloads a month is well above what the average podcaster receives. So that's amazing work. Can you remember back to the beginning when you launched Track and Field Connections? What did your first few months of downloads look like?
Yeah, a little skewed. So from January through the end of March, I published but didn't publicize at all. I would have done it a little differently. I didn't tell the company, right? So it's just kind of like, let's see just what organically happens. And of course, organically, nothing happened. You know, the guest would know they were published, so they would tell their friends and family. So, you know, it was in the, if I got 50, that was like, whoa, hey, that's pretty cool, right? And then as I started doing it on my personal social, and I copped up to the bosses that, hey, man, this has been going on. So we started doing it through our, you know, our corporate social media and stuff like that. You know, certainly it took off and, you know, probably the lower end of our episodes are in the few hundreds. And then we'll have a pop out star that'll go, you know, 600, 700, 800 pretty quickly.
Since you didn't tell the company you were starting a podcast, you obviously didn't have a marketing strategy when you started, but did you create a podcast launch plan or anything like that?
I wish I did. I wish I was that smart and that, coach, you know, intelligent to do things like that. And I think you should, because it'll help you not make as many mistakes as I did. So I didn't tell anybody at work. I didn't tell my bosses. I just said, okay, I'm going to do it. And then it was about, well, who's going to be the first guy? Like, who, you know, no one was doing this in our space. When I went to go ask my first coach, hey, here's this crazy idea I've got going on. Would you like to be our guest? It was a little nerve-wracking because it was so foreign. It's like, what are you doing? Like, you're the guy who sells me my shot puts. Why are you trying to interview me? But as we, you know, kept doing it and stayed consistent with it, and then as the pandemic hit, I mean, coaches were starting so many podcasts in our area in track and field got started. It almost became like, if you're not on a podcast, do you even coach? This is kind of how it started going.
Did you reach out to coaches that you know, or did you reach out to coaches that you wanted to get to know?
The guests are kind of a half and half mix. Half of them are coaches that I actually know. Like I've known them maybe for upwards of 20 years at this point. And then other coaches are honestly people I have never met at all. I know nothing about them, but maybe they coach at such and such school.
Since coaches are your main target, and this is a corporate podcast, does interviewing them result in future sales?
What I've seen through, 100 plus coaches now is both sides, the ones that I know real well and the ones I have no idea about. When we're done with this interview, which, takes 2 hours, no matter what, for a pre and post interview and that kind of stuff, we're connected. I mean, almost batting 1,000%, almost batting all the way on this, that after an interview happens, we'll get business from that coach.
Okay, this makes total sense to me. The value Gil Athletics gets from Track and Field Connections is once you've interviewed the coach, their likelihood to buy is pretty certain. But what kind of value does the coach get out of coming onto your show?
It's both intrinsic and extrinsic, right? So intrinsically, I've had a lot of coaches when we're done, they're like, man, that was a lot of fun to relive these stories, right? They've lived, they've coached 20, 30 years, had a lot of great experiences. And sometimes because the day-to-day coaching, they don't get to think about the great teams they had 10 years ago or the experiences. So some of it's intrinsically just like, man, I had a good time. Like, this was cool to kind of give my story out there. Extrinsically, it's a little bit of ego, right? It's like, oh, see, I was on the Gil podcast. We're the world's largest track equipment manufacturer. So egotistically, I want to say we're a big deal in that sense, but there's a little bit of like, oh man, Gil put me on. They thought enough of me to have me on the show. There's thousands of coaches. I only get 52 coaches a year now. That's a pretty select group.
Well, I think there's a lot of truth to that because you could choose probably any coach that you want and you specifically ask them to come on the show. Do you know if these coaches use your podcast to enhance their personal brands?
I have heard feedback from coaches who have been on the show. They've used it for recruiting. They've sent it to other high school coaches, etc. For college, they've sent it to their alumni. They're like, hey, here's who's leading your program. By the way, we're also fundraising. So they use it in that sense. So, and I've heard of coaches who have utilized it in regards to their own recruitment of finding other jobs, like ADs who have said, hey, I heard you on that podcast and you expressed some values that we actually really care about here. So, we're looking for a new coach.
Wow. It sounds like both the coaches and Gil Athletics get a ton of value from Track and Field Connections. Now, would you recommend that all companies create a podcast? Surely there's value there.
I wanted to automatically say yes. I think I would actually say no. If you're going to do a podcast, my counsel would be that if you're not going to put it out in some kind of regularity, then don't do it. If it's just going to be hodgepodge, we do it on January 1 and then March 15th, and then you're not going to build up any kind of listenership that you're going to really drive the engine every time you publish that episode.
Some companies might be nervous about the commitment a podcast takes. I mean, do they have to produce content every single week?
You don't have to do it weekly. It could be biweekly. It literally could be monthly. That also would work. It's just as long as you're on the same kind of cadence and you know that you're doing it to give value to listeners, not to do it as a commercial. There's other aspects for commercials type marketing. I don't think podcasts are it.
I think that's really great advice. Consistency is key in just about anything that you do in life. Now, maybe we can switch gears. You actually teach a college course on podcasting. How did that start?
Life got real good for me when I started giving value to as many people as possible with zero expectation of return. In our space, at least in the track and field market, I kind of feel like I led the way for podcasting. So I was the first one to start. And then we had so many that, blew up and started doing themselves. And so I did everything I could to help them. So that led me to actually write an article on LinkedIn, kind of down and dirty. You want to start a podcast, man, I can get you up in 10 minutes. And then it's interesting how things just kind of happen. a friend of my wife's, a friend of a friend of my wife's, works for a community college up in the Chicago area, actually called Triton Community College. And they were looking for someone to teach an intro to podcasting class. So I reached out to the school and I was like, there's no way. I mean, they're in Chicago, so there's a lot of people and a lot of podcasters, right? But I was like, if it all falls through, maybe they'll have me do it. And I interviewed with the dean of the continuing education and I got it. sometimes you get desperate. You pick people out of a hat, I guess. So the spring was our first semester, a 12-week course where we do it all through Zoom, and it's intro to podcasting.
Well, I think anyone that's made it this far in the podcast will agree that I doubt they picked your name out of a hat. When the students show up to your class, they're obviously trying to learn podcasting, but have you noticed any commonalities with the questions or things that they want to know?
A lot of them are coming to the course looking for that pill, that magic pill. We feel like, hey, if I put out this podcast and I tweet it and Instagram and Facebook it, I should get whatever you think success is, thousands of downloads per episode. And so a lot of people are looking for that. How do I make this 1,000 download episode podcast? And I'm afraid the answer is what they don't. There's no magic pill. It's give value. Make sure your value is good, that people, you're providing something for people to come back to every week or every episode. And then two, it's longevity. it's doing it over and over and over and building that base one listener at a time almost, as you build up to whatever you deem as success. So that's what a lot of people are doing. And then the other half is, I have no clue. It just sounds like a cool thing. So teach me how to podcast.
Yeah. I don't know if there's like this glut of podcasters who have created podcasts and spontaneously become rich. There is this weird culture around podcasting where half of them think they're never going to charge money for it. And the other half think that they're going to get rich instantly. There's very few who realize that it's a grind until you make it. If you ever do.
When I teach this class, like I talked to them, I was like, first of all, let's just lay the expectation. You're not going to get rich off of this. So if that's your expectation, this is the wrong class.
So if you tell them that, at least initially, money isn't going to be the reason they create their podcast, what kind of advice would you give them?
You have to be doing this for your own intrinsic reasons. Like you want to provide value. You want an outlet for your feelings or emotions, depending on what kind of podcast. I'm really big into teaching I don't know what I actually would call it, but more like a heritage or legacy type of podcast. And what I mean by that is the podcast, you're actually doing it not for the mass of strangers, but you're doing it for your own family. So you're interviewing your grandma, your grandpa, your great aunt, grand uncle, and you're capturing their stories in a longevity form. Like we can come back. If someone were to interview me today about my history, my grandkids or my great grandkids who may never meet me will get to hear from me. Hey, here's how I grew up in the 1980s, and here's what I was doing when I first had children in the 2010s.
There certainly is an appeal to maybe creating audio content just for the consumption of your family. And you never know, there might be someone out there who also thinks your family's pretty interesting. So is your position that if somebody wants to start a podcast, that they should do it? Or would you say that the work it takes to be successful just makes the barrier to entry too hard?
If someone were to come to you, Greg, and say, hey, should I start a Twitter account? You would probably say, yeah, sure. What's the harm? Do it. But who cares if you don't post anything, or if you post the wrong thing, you delete whatever. Yeah, do it. Big deal. That is my attitude towards podcasting. Like, should I start a podcasting? Absolutely. Do it. Figure it out. You'll learn. You'll get better just in your own life, just from learning and doing a new thing, which I'm a big believer in. So it's like, yeah, do it. Figure out whatever topic you want to do. Maybe you want to talk about being a parent, or maybe you want to talk about bicycling, or whatever you want to do. In today's world, you can find something that you're passionate about. There are other people that are passionate with you.
I definitely think it's true that you can find a group of people that likes just about any one thing. Now, let's say there's a podcaster who has found their thing to talk about, and they've been grinding away at their podcast for a little while, and they just want to grow. And they think, maybe I'll just buy that new microphone. If I sound a little bit better, maybe people will love my show.
Bringing it back to that microphone, it's a great circle back there. That would be my biggest piece of advice. If you're grinding along, I love that term you use there, Greg, and you think, how can I jump from 100 to 1,000? And it's like, you know what? There's this new microphone, the Blue Yetis and all this stuff. It's like, if I bite that'll do it. And it's like, man, your audio can be perfect. You can go to a professional studio all you want. If the value, if what you're giving out isn't of value to others, doesn't matter. Literally does not matter. A brand new mic, a brand new video, whatever, is not going to do it if the value you're creating isn't valuable.
Well, you've given such great advice throughout this whole interview. Is there anything that you're struggling with on track and field connections?
Yeah, you know, it's the editing side. Like, how do we, who's going to come along? And maybe it's out there and you can point me in the right direction, but how do we figure out how to edit our audio so it is better? I mean, that is an important aspect, but not spend days doing it, right? If somehow there's a little machine that you feed your audio file in and it spits it out perfect, man, that's, that person's going to be rich, because I actually would, that'd be something I would pay for on our podcast.
Well, if you have any advice for Mike, leave a comment on whatever platform it is you're listening to this podcast on, or you can hit Mike and I up on Twitter. Speaking of that, Mike, how does everyone find you?
My name is Mike Cunningham. My Twitter is at Mike Cunningham. So no spaces, dashes, all that kind of stuff. Just spell my name. And I put my money where my mouth is. You connect with me on Twitter and send me a message, I actually respond. It's a social network for me. So it's no different than sending me a text message, if you will. So that's the best place is through Twitter.
Mike, thank you so much for being on the show. I know I received tremendous value from our conversation, and I know our listeners will too.
Thanks, Greg. I appreciate you, man.
Thank you so much to Mike Cunningham, host of the Gill Athletics Track and Field Connections podcast. I'll put all the links to Track and Field Connections plus everything that we talked about on today's show down in the show notes below. So if anything sounds interesting to you, you can check it out there. If you're an indie podcaster, you should check out indiedropin.com/creators for a chance to be featured on one of Indie Drop-In shows for free. And if you made it this far in the podcast, go ahead and hit subscribe. And if you found this information valuable, forward it to one podcaster who also might find it valuable. I'm sure they would appreciate it, and I know I would. Thanks again for listening to Podcast Creators by Indie Drop-In Network. See you next time.